Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Nuts. That was fucking crazy, right?
Yeah. Hello, and welcome to Still Watching, a weekly television podcast from Vanity Fair. I'm Chris Murphy.
And I'm Richard Lawson. We're here to discuss the third and biggest bombshell episode of the HBO series Succession, Connor's Wedding.
I'm fine. Okay. Let's just enjoy the sham marriage and the death of romance. It's going to be great.
And later on, we'll be hearing from the bride herself. Justine Loop, who plays Willa, talked to Vanity Fair about saying goodbye to the show and the cast's Call Me Maybe dance party on the red carpet.
But first, a quick recap of the most Did That Just Happen episode of the show, Connor's Wedding.
The episode starts with a very alive Logan ordering Roman to terminate Jerry.
Dad?
I mean, you are with me. You weren't just fucking me around.
Well, sure.
We'll make it tidy afterwards.
The Roy kids board the boat for Connor's wedding, but a major plot twist awaits.
Hello? Fucky Sucky Brigade, how can I help you?
Hey, Roman.
Yeah.
Hey, your dad is very sick.
And the emotionally challenged Roy children all of a sudden had emotions.
They think dad died.
What?
Yeah.
No.
I'm sorry.
No, I can't have that.
Connor and Willa decide to tie the knot despite the death of the patriarch.
Could come out of something bad.
And the battle over Roy Co. Waystar officially kicked off, but the teams are a bit hazy.
And in terms of your roles at the company?
We intend to shepherd it through its whatever its future may be, but we'll be there. We intend to be there.
So, Chris, my brag is that I'd already seen this episode before.
I know. I'm so
mad at you. And I was
mad at you.
Very, I think I did a good job of keeping the secret in my review and on this podcast.
You really did.
So I have to ask, how shocked were you?
It sounds crazy, given that the show is literally called Succession, and from the very first episode, it was telegraphed that Logan is going to die at some point, but I was literally gooped and gagged, completely shocked for it to happen. And again, it's HBO's playbook. Like, we've seen The Red Wedding. We know that they like to sort of pull the rug out from under us when we least expect it with, like, major character deaths. But for Logan to die on episode 3 of a 10-episode final season, I was not emotionally prepared for it. And for it to happen so unceremoniously, too, just like it was giving Elvis, like he was like on the toilet and on a plane, you know, and then he's on the floor, basically, right? And we don't even see that. We didn't see, there was no grand, my last wish, my last rites, my
there was no
testament.
Nate in 6 feet under, narm. Like he's just already on the floor, unconscious.
He's dead. And I actually, so I have a question. So I was absolutely floored, could not handle what I was watching.
Yeah.
How long do you think he was dead on the floor?
Oh, I think when they broke the bathroom door open or unlocked it, he was already dead.
He's already dead.
And I think there was probably some sort of policy that they had to work on him to, you know, like CPR or whatever,
yeah.
Or chest compressions, like as long as they were legally required to or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, that's it.
And then that was it.
I think it was like a very quick thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, to the indignity of dying either near or on a toilet. It was on a private jet.
Yeah, that's true. So still an air of class.
I mean,
you know?
Environmentally irresponsible, but still sort of fancy.
Yeah,
I mean, I wrote something about the episode that went up last night. And apologies that we had to record late, but HBO was not sending out screeners for this episode.
They did not want us to see this early.
And I said that, like, what I love sort of artistically about the choice that Jesse Armstrong, who wrote the episode, made to have this death so unceremonial, so off camera,
mm-hmm.
Is that that's how it is for a lot of people in life. You get a phone call while you're distracted by something else. You know, you're having a normal day or a big day like a wedding, and then this phone call comes in. And I think that that was reflective of a lot of people in the real world's experience, and also meant that we caught the Roy kids so off guard.
Okay, just like go private, be somewhere private, just speak. It's weird, but speak, okay? Like, you never know, he might hear you.
Dad? Hey. Dad? Daddy?
That was a rare opportunity to see these characters and thus these actors get to be really flustered and emotionally raw. They're usually... they can act out, but they usually have some sense of, like, there's a second agenda behind mm-hmm. their behavior. This was just pure reaction.
Pure reaction, pure nerves, you know, just frayed nerves. I thought a lot during the episode about, like, the phrase, like, private and public. Like, you know, because it's such a private, it's such a personal private moment, you know, the death of their father. And they're all processing it in such finely drawn, specific, true to their character ways. Roman is in complete denial. Roman's like, he's not dead. He's, like, you know, he's going to be fine. Kendall is... definitely sad, but there's an edge of, like, not to use the word gleeful, but there's, like, it's more complicated, his emotions.
There's a weight has lifted off his shoulders.
Yes.
Maybe a new one has descended, but, like...
100%. There is something, a burden has been lifted from Kendall. And then Shiv is Princess Spiral, completely daddy's girl, like, fully... blubbering, like a complete mess of a human. And Connor doesn't even know for like 17 minutes, which is, again, classic too. But I come back to like this, like the phrase of private and public, because it is to see each of the Roy children, because you're totally right. Death is this, you know, it can happen at any time. It's in our modern era, you know, it's a text, it's an email, it's a phone call.
Yeah.
But to see them have to process this private information in literal public, they're on a boat surrounded by, you know, people for the most part. They're, you know, ashore, and now they're literally, and that was sort of beautiful. It's like they're literally ashore. Like their rock, their dad, their anchor is gone.
Yeah,
and they were at sea.
Yeah,
finding out this news, and now they are all emotionally and at sea as well. So I thought that that juxtaposition of like this private public moment was so wonderful.
Yeah, and I think that watching them, you know, the way the episode was filmed, these were not single takes.
Yeah.
I mean, but they were made to look like, you know, I saw the sort of post show little wrap up that they do on HBO, mm-hmm. and they shot in segments, this long reaction stuff. And then just one time they did it all the way through. It was 27 minutes the way through.
Yeah.
Yeah, with like three cameras, and they're reloading film.
And they were hiding film. They said they were hiding film on set so they could just keep reloading and not break the take, which is so... it felt like a play, not to be obsessed with plays.
I mean, Kieran Culkin said it felt like doing a one-act play. And Mark mm-hmm. Mylod, the director, said that he thinks that a lot of that footage from the whole run-through was used in the mm-hmm. final episode. And that immediacy, the camera's so close, it got some of the best... I mean, these are already... good performances, great performances, but like some of the best work out of these actors. If we had to, we'll talk about who gets the Waystar Royko throne later, but mm-hmm. like Emmy throne, like
Sarah Snook. Yeah. I'm honestly, that race, thinking about White Lotus and Fleischman is in trouble, and just like that category at the Emmys is going to be an absolute bloodbath. But I was so blown out of the water, specifically by Sarah Snook's performance this episode, and from like processing, you know, Logan's death and her, you know, daddy, I love you, like sort of flustered. And then like layering in the Tom of it all, like, are you just being nice? Are you telling me my dad isn't dead just to be nice to me? Because we are sort of divorced, but sort of still married. Layering that in on top of like the family stuff, and then her, because Shiv, and that's the thing that I love about our girl boss Shiv, who can never do it right. She's the one who steps up to the plate. She's the one who gives the statement at the end. And guess what? The statement, not good.
And she's the one who tells Connor.
She's the one who gets things done. The boys are ineffectual. She is She puts on her pants. She puts her hair in a little ponytail, which was kind of insane that she wore a ponytail to her brother's wedding. She didn't get her hair done. Right. But she, hair up in a bun, hair, she ties her hair up, she puts on her pants, and she gets the job done, even if the job, it doesn't necessarily, like, she doesn't necessarily do a great job. So if there's one performance or one person that I would single out as, like, deserves, like, the accolades and and the flowers, for me, it has to be Sarah.
I should clarify. She's the one who volunteers to tell Connor that the dad isn't coming to the wedding.
Yeah.
She's not who tells him that the dad's dead.
That's true. Yes,
they sort of tell him together, right?
Yeah.
No, she's incredible. I mean, everyone is doing something different, but what I liked about how that's all integrated is that it was, yes, these were different reactions. It was denial. It was some sort of, I guess, Kendall's acceptance.
But a weird, and also like business moves, because he was like, we need to figure out what our next move is. Like,
well, right. Because not just a father has died, a boss has died, a shareholder has died, an American Titan or whatever, Shiv described him at the
end. And
the
stock prices are reflecting that as they tumble.
Yeah. And watching those wheels start to spin. And I think that when a sudden death happens, there is, of course, the initial shock. And then even minutes later, there can be that sort of like, a weird deadening, a numbing feeling. Mm-hmm. And to see the kids go through that where they're just kind of sitting and being like, what do we do? Yeah. Like, not like, what do we do with our lives? But like, what do we do right now?
Yes. When, like, literally, what are we
supposed to be doing? Like, you know, at one point they're talking about, I think this is later in the episode when like they're waiting at the airport maybe, about like what to do with a funeral. And Kendall says, we'll get a funeral off the rack. We could do Reagan's with tweaks.
Reagan's with tweaks.
And it's like, okay, so now you're back to that cynical Roy
rich
kind
kid.
Of. And that's a joke too. Like, he's kind of being funny, but he's also kind of not. And so I think just watching them process this in a way that was, each character was distinct, but it wasn't like, we weren't getting archetypes.
Yeah.
They were true to the characters and they worked in relation and they kind of kept shifting as different dynamics happened. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was just really well done.
It was super well done. I do want to know, I just shouted out Sarah Snook, but I do think I would definitely shout out Alan Ruck, who now for two episodes in a row has delivered some of the most devastating lines I've ever seen on camera. I mean, I think this episode, once he finds out the news so much later than his siblings, because they sort of don't tell him, they sort of forget to tell him, because Connor's sort of the forgotten son. He says,
he never even liked me.
Hey, sorry. You know what? I'm sorry. I don't even know what I mean. He did. I never got the chance to make him proud of me.
I can't even speak about how sad that is.
Yeah. Well, he never liked me. And then just a beat or two later, I never got to make him proud. And it's like, okay, so this is the war within him. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that we have to be careful about with Connor as we go forward this season is that he has had now two episodes back to back where he has been sensitively rendered, and we feel for him. He's done the kind thing or the gracious thing, kind of trying to free will. We'll talk more about their wedding at the end of the episode, but he's bad.
Yeah, he's like, bad. Don't remind me that he's bad.
He, in having no politics, he has the worst politics.
Yes.
And he's probably running for president, and we need to be wary of him because now he has an emotional.
Well, I'm going to push back on this because you're right that he's bad, but come on. Like, he's like, I've never felt probably as much empathy, you know, his empty wedding, his dad is dead, who never, and he's sort of right. He never really liked Connor that much. Like, that's the thing that's, the reason why it's devastating is because he's not wrong. Connor is right.
The whole loony cake thing.
That is his mom. That was crazy.
What happened? When his mom got carted off to
when Logan sent his mom to a mental
institution. He ate cake for a week because that was the only way to get him to calm down or whatever. And it's just like, well, there's a whole huge backstory.
There's a huge that we barely touch on. That, like, and I wonder, because Brian Cox gave some interviews about the episode to the New York Times and to Vulture, and he said that he's not out of the show completely. There are some flashbacks.
Interesting.
Yeah, there are some flashbacks that happen at some point this season. So I wonder, I mean, I doubt that it's probably Connor and the Looney Cakes, but I'm curious to see how that gets weaved into the fabric of the show. But you're right. It's important. I'm glad that you've reminded us that Connor is bad, because right now I'm like, oh my God, I feel of all the Roy children, I might feel the most for him. I don't know. That's kind of hard.
I think that in the moments of this episode where they are really just standing in the wreckage before the gears start turning, you're just like, oh, these are all broken people.
Yeah.
You know, and they are full adults and it's their responsibility to like work on that brokenness and not be harmful to the world, which is what their company is and what Connor potentially will be if he becomes president. Like, these are clumsy sort of titans wielding a lot of power. And, yeah. and we should always keep that in our mind when we consider them. But yeah, I mean, I think that this show is so clever about its portrait of sort of like insidious wealth and power. Is that much more insidious because these people are human beings. It would mm-hmm. be really easy if we could just, I think some of these people in real life are sociopaths.
Yeah.
But like, not all of them are. And that makes them both, I guess, sort of sympathetic to some degree, but also more dangerous.
Yeah.
In a way.
More dangerous.
You know? And I think that complicated portrait that we can feel something for, but also be sort of scared of and sort of repulsed by, is why the show works, you know.
And I think a really good example of that, this episode, who also, another phenomenal performance, is Kieran Culkin, Roman.
Yeah.
Right? He has to do the monstrous thing. He has to fire, his last thing that he ever has to do for his dad is fire Jerry because the Mad King is going crazy and is losing his marbles. And he doesn't really want to do it, but he does it because, you know, Logan tells him to. And that is so painful. And like, and J. Smith Cameron does excellent work too in terms of that interaction where like, you can feel his guilt. You can feel that he knows that he shouldn't be doing this.
Right.
He shouldn't be firing Jerry. And that it doesn't make any sense. And yet, like, he takes orders from his dad because that's his dad. He's gonna listen to his dad.
Yeah.
And also, another devastating thing with Roman this episode is that, like, he thinks, and he probably thinks that, like, Logan heard that, like, voicemail that he left.
Yeah. You can't fucking keep expecting me to bend over for you, like, being cunty. So I'm just asking. So, yeah, that's the question. Are you a cunt? Okay, give me buzz.
And that was the last thing that he ever said.
Maybe it killed him.
Maybe it killed him.
I don't think so. But I don't think Logan has thicker skin than that.
No, and I bet he didn't hear it. I'm sure he didn't hear it.
No. I think that, like, also the stuff with Jerry is that when Logan says to him, you should be the one to tell her, you know, you're close. He's firing her because of this thing with Roman, this dick pic and this whatever Logan thinks happened or what actually did happen. And if he's going to bring Roman closest to the fold of all the siblings, Jerry can't be there.
She can't be
which
there.
Is sexual harassment. I mean, that's
and
like...
And she has a lawsuit. She should be hiring those lawyers that Tom Wamsgan has on retainer and, like, and suing Logan.
Roman turns mean and he says, you know, we'll basically, if you try to go the law route, we're going to screw you over, you know, but we're going to stuff you with tons of money, so don't do it. Mm-hmm. You know, so maybe if we're talking about Jerry, we should bring in the other kind of Waystar Royko people who were mostly on the plane. And I also thought that was, you know, obviously the kids are going to get all the sort of accolades about, you know, this performance, this episode. But like all those actors on the plane were in a very different way incredible as well.
Oh, so fantastic. Because, I mean, they're dealing with the actual trauma of like watching a man die.
Yeah.
While also like being trapped in the air and, you know, not knowing, you know, what to do and how to process that. And I thought they did such an amazing job. I love that Carolina came to the forefront. I wrote down, Carolina is who Carrie thinks she is. Carolina is that girl. Carolina is business. She, you know, she should take the throne, the Waystar Royko throne.
Just an incredible performance and just her sort of breezy but like firm hand in sort of guiding, like, okay, I think we need to make a call list and do all this. Yeah. And then when Carrie comes out distraught, Chuckles the Clown, as she's called, and they all sort of are like, oh, no, we want to include you, but why don't you go lie down? Yeah. You've had a shock. Like, they're not going to be like, it's that sort of old Succession thing of pre-Logan's death Succession thing of like, fuck off and go away.
Yeah.
They're more sort of like, no, let's not rock the boat and rock the plane.
Mannered,
just
like,
go, yeah.
Go take a nap. Go sip on your, you know, your little sippy cup in the corner and like,
because
the adults are talking. And right now, you are not in a place emotionally or, you know, mentally to have a seat at this table.
Right. And is that going to be, could that possibly be what the firm management of Waystar Royko looks like without Logan? If the guy who yells a lot is gone, can there still be that same sort of like ruthlessness, but in a quieter and perhaps more even sinister, tone? I think that's an interesting thing to consider. But there also were moments of genuine tenderness. You know, I think Frank reminding, like, I've known this guy pretty much your whole life or longer than you've been alive or whatever it is. And, like, as much as these people were all sort of remoras on the great big shark whale or whatever that was Logan, there maybe was at some point some genuine, like, friendship, yeah, camaraderie.
That is a word that we don't really bandy about that much with Logan, but I think is fair and I think is important to bring up, especially for, like, Frank and those, you know, those people on the plane and, you know, like, raising a glass to Logan, but also just the uncertainty of, like, not knowing whether or not he's dead. We talk about how Succession is, like, a drama, but really it's, like, a sort of a dark comedy, and this episode was obviously lighter on jokes than previous one-liners and previous episodes, but still there was something sort of morbidly hilarious, darkly comic that they, like, didn't really know if he was dead or not.
Right.
And they had to sort of press on and sort of, you know, figure out what to do with the company, what to do with the kids. Kendall, you know, being absolutely ridiculous, trying to get the pilot on the line. It's like, actually, no, the pilot has to fly the plane, honey. He can't.
Yeah, right. Like, let's be rational here.
Let's be rational. And somebody has to be rational. And the rational people are Carolinas. It's our Franks. They're the people who are sort of, like, steering the ship that has now completely gone off course and that is may never be able to be righted again. I will say, before we move on, I mean, having Tom, the most mealy-mouthed man in the world, have to tell you that your dad is maybe dead, because he never really says exactly what it is. And he already, like, Tom already obfuscates and, like, sort of speaks in sort of riddles sometimes and doesn't just, like, he's the opposite of Logan being like, fuck off, telling you to your
face.
He's
not direct.
He's not direct. So I thought that was also a brilliant decision creatively to have Tom be the one to sort of deliver the news to the kids, because, like, Tom never says what's actually happening.
But I thought he did a good job. I mean, I think that, like, you know, just a scene or two prior, he gets off the phone with Roman and says, fucking asshole, which is like, haven't really heard Tom be that sort of like, I think Tom at that moment felt very secure in his position at the company. Mm-hmm. And then when Logan dies, he calls Greg and says, I've lost my protector.
Yes,
and like, you know, but I think that the instinct to call the kids and be like, he might still be conscious. Do you want to talk to him before he goes? It would be a goodbye. And he's stumbling over that, but it's a hard thing to say.
It is a hard thing to say.
This crackling connection, phone connection. That, it was nice to see the gloves come off for a little bit and Tom just be like, hey, guys, like, I've known all of you for years. Like, your dad is probably dead.
Yeah.
Like, let's put the guns and swords and knives aside for a second and, like, here, let me just let you have a human moment, hopefully, with your dad. We're seeing different sides of the character. And then, of course, Tom snaps right back and is like, hey, Greg, there's a file on my computer.
Yeah, I
you
need
to
delete
it. And then empty the trash, which is like, Tom, they can still find those, by the way. Like, that doesn't mean it's gone.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he is now in a vulnerable position, which maybe at the end at the airport where he gets a hug from Shiv and, like, clearly, and then she calls him over to the car after that, like, maybe he's like, okay, am I safe? But he's thinking strategically, as are, of course, the rest of his, you know, coworkers.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that is true. He does provide them a final, something akin to a final genuine moment with their father, and each of the siblings sort of stumbles. I mean, and that's the thing that, like, this is going to maybe sound a little cliche, but, like, death is, like, artless. It's a graceless, you know, it's like, it's not a clean cut, easy thing most of the time. So it makes sense that Tom would sort of be stumbling through this and that each kid stumbles through their last sort of phone call with their father, you know, not knowing if he's alive, if he's not alive, you know, I love you, but they also kind of hate, like, I think even Kendall says, like, I love you, but, like, I don't forgive you. He can't forgive you. And I guess this is, like, a question that I have for you. Can you love someone if you can't forgive them? That's sort of what Kendall says.
I think that there are no rules to that kind of thing. I mean, I think it's just a feeling you have. And I think that love for these people, and I think a lot of people, is just an intensity. It's a description of degree. It's not, like, it's not defined by affection necessarily. It's like, it, I mean, it could be, I guess it could be hate. That's another kind of passion. But, like, I think that, you know, the show ending with Kendall's face, like, he is kind of the first among equals in terms of this ensemble cast.
Yeah.
And, like, he has had the most contentious relationship with his father over the course of the show. I think there's relief there. I think what it really is for Kendall is, you know, he thinks he's this great sort of warrior guy. He makes so many mistakes and he's a buffoon in a lot of ways. But, like, if he cynically looked at it, which of course he will, it's like, I beat him.
Yeah, he won at the end of the day, right?
And especially because Kendall, by some metric, almost died last season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so maybe Logan would have beat him then, even though he, you know, like, odds were, of course, that Kendall would outlive his father.
Yes.
But, like, maybe, you know, but reflective of Roman saying, you're a monster, you'll get better. Like, maybe these kids really believed in somehow...
He was
kind
immortal.
Of joking about Rupert Murdoch last week, that he couldn't die.
Yeah, that I think there was 100% somewhere deep down, all of them thought that he was sort of going to live forever in a way.
Yeah.
He was immortal because he was too big. Think he was too big to fail.
As Carrie Bradshaw would say, he's the Chrysler building.
He's the Chrysler, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, so for them to be dropped back to earth and sort of faced with the fact that the biggest person in all of their lives, and I think that's the thing that's so fantastic about this show and Succession, because it is a family drama, and for each of the siblings, the biggest person in their lives is Logan, Logan,
right.
The towering monster daddy figure. And for that, like, boom, to pop that bubble, to burst that bubble with his death, I think they all sort of didn't think that was ever going to happen in a way, even though it was always going to happen. And that's the thing about, the human emotions in our brain is that we can hold these two things to be true that are, like, contrasting and conflicting. Like, of course he was going to die, but he was also never going to die.
There was some magical thinking happening in that family.
Mm-hmm. Still Watching will be back in just a moment. And when we return, a conversation with Justine Loop, and we'll also look at who will replace the late Logan Roy in his media empire.
So the Shakespeare rules. If it's a tragedy, it ends with a death. If it's a comedy, it ends with a wedding. We had both.
We had both. I mean, can we really call Connor and Willa what happens, not a wedding? I mean, it is a wedding, but oof.
Was that sweet? I can't tell. If I'm on that boat and I'm one of the last guests, like, we saw a couple bridesmaids.
Like, three people
on
left.
This empty boat, this cloudy sky. Everyone's cleared out because, like, basically the guy who made all this possible is just dropped dead in a toilet. Was that the right decision?
So speaking of acting, I think we got to talk about Justine Loop, who does amazing work as Willa this episode, where I would love to say wholeheartedly, like, yeah, like, you know, at least if there's one silver lining, like, Connor and Willa, like, they tie the knot and that's happy. But the face that she makes, the slight little eye roll movement that she makes when Connor point blank asks her, are you just marrying me for money? I think it was so telling and so fantastic and just so, like, she can't say, she says that's a part of
she's
it.
Like, there's some financial security as part of it, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there was a beautiful little scene before anyone knew who was dead with Willa's mom, Sylvia, where Willa gets kind of taken away by somebody, and then it's just Connor and Sylvia, who are maybe closer in age.
I was literally like, Connor should be marrying Willa's mom and not Willa.
And she's
that
like,
would make more sense.
Look at all the young people.
I heard a few of them moaning about the rich.
No, they don't mind the taste of your champagne.
Mr. Scrooge just happened to be a huge wealth creator. They don't mention that in Mr. Dickens' books, do they?
No, they do not. Very convenient.
And she earlier had been saying to Willa, like, he'll take care of you. Like, that was a really interesting window into where Willa's from.
Yes.
I also wanted to point out for you, you know, theater nerd, fellow theater nerd, Cynthia Mace, the actress who plays her, was the original Harper in the original workshop of Angels in America at the Mark Taper Forum in L.A.
I literally just got chills fully down
my
spine.
She gave the original Night Flight to San Francisco monologue.
That is absolutely, that's
isn't
absolutely
that cool?
Unbelievably cool. Oh, my God.
And she has one scene in this, but she's so good.
So
IMDb says she's coming back for one more episode. So I'm fingers crossed. Or two more, actually.
I hope there's more. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. She's so good. And I thought, that makes sense. The theater actress. Yeah. They really do come through on this show. I do... Oh, wow. I'm, like, sort of blown away by that. But yes, it was for Willa. When Willa has to say that she's happy, she says, I'm happy.
Yeah.
But her face betrays that she's definitely not exactly completely happy. So that wedding is not completely happy. But I guess that does bring us to sort of maybe the more brass tacks of it all. Like, we saw the stock prices sort of falling on a phone screen by the end of the episode.
Yeah.
What's going to happen to the business now that Logan is dead?
I don't know. I love, there is a really poetic line there where Roman, you know, looks at his phone and says to Shiv and Kendall, there he is. That's Dad. The drop.
The drop.
You know? And it's like, that's, I mean, of course, that's how they think of him. Let's talk about who succeeds after in a bit. But first, speaking of Willa, our great coworker Julie Miller has an interview with Justine Loop, who plays Willa.
Yes.
Unfortunately, because HBO was being very strict about this, she was not able to talk about specifically episode three very much. But it's a good talk about like Willa as a whole. Mm-hmm. So let's hear that now.
All right. Well, Willa and Connor have kind of had a roller coaster relationship. What did you think when you saw that she was going to accept Connor's proposal at the end of last season? Were you happy?
I was so excited. I don't know how much of it was my, you know, my ambitions for Willa and kind of feeling like, oh, that's the right thing. And how much it was just me feeling like, as Justine, loving Alan Ruck and loving working with Alan Ruck and being excited that that's what's going on in our storyline. I can't really tell how much was me and how much was my feelings about, you know, just like what was right for Willa, but I was really excited.
Willa obviously makes Connor happy, but I'm always wondering what would make Willa happy. Like, I want Willa to just, you know, get justice and happiness. What do you think that would look like?
You know, I think that Connor does make Willa happy. It's so funny because everybody is kind of like, I just read Kieran in an interview talking about how he feels like Connor is the most like evil of all the siblings because he bought a human and has trapped her for all these years. And I kind of feel like there's something about, I think Willa is entertained. I think she loves to be entertained. I think she loves to be kind of stimulated. She's very artistic. And I think there's something about Connor's eccentricity that actually is both kind of terrifying and like disturbing to her, but also incredibly endearing and colorful and kind of, I think she gets a kick out of it. So, I think she likes that. I think she really, security makes her happy, you know. I think she obviously loves the fiscal security he provides and the fact that he enables her artistry, but also I think that she likes the security that she finds in him emotionally. Like, he's a very reliable partner, as kooky as he is. He's always there for her and he always kind of comes to her defense. So I don't know. I think she actually, like, I think Connor does make her happy. And there's things that are clearly, you know, not ideal, but there's something good going on there, in my opinion.
Right, right. I'm curious, what do you think Connor and Willa's prenup looks like?
You know, knowing Connor, I almost feel like he was very, very generous.
I can see that too.
That if someone in his family looked at it, they'd go, oh my God, dude, what the F are you thinking? Imagine
like
it's going to work out well for Willa if something goes wrong, you know?
Right. It must have been fun for you because you get to be a little bit of a bystander to these insane characters over the years and just sort of sit back and watch. Has there been anything that surprised you about the characters' turns, especially in the last season?
Yeah. I was surprised by Roman's kind of sensitivity that comes through. He seems to have more emotional intelligence than he's had prior, and he seems more kind of compassionate than some of the other like characters on the show. Just the way that he kind of protects Shiv in the moment where right after she talks to Tom, and the way that he protects Connor. I don't know. He always kind of waves in and out of me feeling like repelled by him and then me feeling endeared to him. So I guess Roman is always surprising for me. And then I think it's hard to distinguish like how much of it is Shiv evolving and how much of it is just Sarah Snook's performance evolving. But I just keep on seeing more and more out of that character. And it's just so exciting to watch. I mean, I feel like in the first episode of this season, I was just like floored by just a completely refreshing and kind of new energy out of Shiv and slash Sarah's performance. And so, yeah, there's no like, I'm never not surprised by how, what I'm seeing, you know. It's like everything is just so, it's such an exciting show and the performances are so exciting. And so I guess I'm constantly surprised by both the content and the performances, and just seeing my friends and that have become like my family members just kind of rise into new levels. It's really been wild, and I'm really, yeah, grateful for the ride. Yeah.
Oh, well, speaking of the final season, I think I heard that Alan Ruck said that his final scene was with you and the actors who play his siblings. Was that mm-hmm. your final scene as well with those mm-hmm. those actors? That's a good core group. How is that to film?
Oh, God. That day was just like, I walked in and I just like immediately started sobbing and like just seeing all the people that I love in that space. It just made me cry like immediately. So I remember that right out the gate. I was just like, okay, this is going to be one of those days. Like I remember warning the makeup people and I was like, listen, this is going to be the worst day ever for you because I'm going to just be ruining all of your work over and over again. And then I would sob and then I'd kind of like pull out, like it would like pass through me and I'd be like, okay, we're good. And then I'd be like, kind of like, oh no, like, am I not going to feel this anymore? Like, am I like numb now? Like I really had like a full like roller coaster of a ride with the whole thing. I'd be like, no, I'm totally good now. Like, I guess like that was it. I mourned it and it's over. And then it would hit me again and I would just like start sobbing. And then I'd be like, okay, we have to like get it together and start. So it's just in and out and in and out of these kind of waves of mourning. And then the minute that we actually wrapped, it was just like an embarrassing affair. I just remember like, I remember sobbing, like, you know, when children cry and they're just like, I can't believe this is happening. I can't, this is a nightmare. It was like that kind of crying, which I can't believe I'm like, I'm being honest about, but yeah, it was embarrassing. And I remember just being, at like both like feeling completely comfortable being like that and also horrified at myself and kind of just and trying to take it all in at the same time and everyone just being so like loving and hugging everyone goodbye. And it's just, yeah, feeling like this kind of dream state. It was wild.
Was anyone else crying?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely would have won an award for like the level of like just complete blubbering on the floor, like just sopping wet with tears kind of crying. But everybody was crying. And people that were like, I never expected Kieran to cry. Kieran was crying, you know.
Really?
Yeah. It wasn't his last day either. It was just Ruck and I. So it was just really sweet to have all of them kind of surround us and like show us how much they loved us. And yeah, it was tough. I also, every time I would look at Alan, I would have to not look at Alan in between takes because I was like, I'm done for. If I look at him and I like absorb how much I love him and how terrible this is, that this is it for these two, it's going to be worst case scenario kind of material. So I just tried not to look at him. Yeah.
Was there a wrap party or did you get to celebrate after that?
Yeah, luckily we've got to celebrate a few times. I think we really maxed out our celebrations. We did like a wrap party right after. We did like a drinks thing like like after the table read with a lot of people. And then we did a wrap party after we wrapped the season, and then we did another wrap party we did another wrap party the night before the premiere, and then the night of the premiere we also did like a huge like dance party at the premiere. So we really like, honestly, we used up all of our parties. I think we had more wrap parties than we deserved.
Oh, I think I saw that there was video of Brian Cox like dancing to, I forget, some incredible.
Call Me Maybe. Hips. It was Call Me Maybe.
Oh, what a moment.
Yeah, with Jesse Armstrong together, those two in the middle of it. Yeah, I know.
What was it like to witness that?
Oh, it was just the best. It was like so cathartic and like fun. And like, it was just so cool that they got in there and both of those guys danced with everyone. Cause all of us are real dance. Like Sarah Snook's like a crazy dancer, loves dancing. I love dancing. Juliana loves dancing. Nick loves dancing. Like we all love dancing. We do it all the time. So to have them join us. And I just remember it was just so beautiful seeing them dance together and like, fun to dance with Jesse, who's like my boss, who I kind of like admire in this way where it's like I'm a little intimidated by him. And then I was like, I remember at one point like kind of like booty dancing with him and just like getting up against him being like, well, this is the moment. If ever there's going to be a time that we break the boundaries, this is going to be it. And it was just so much fun. It was just so cool. And I remember like reading, someone sent me a tweet just like a few days later being like, how like, check out the cast of Succession dancing to Call Me Maybe by like, it's the best song they've ever heard. And I kind of remember feeling like, oh my God, this is the best song I've ever heard. Because we were just so like full of joy and it was so fun, you know?
Yeah. And I'm just in denial for the moment about the show ending. I'm just taking one episode at a time and there'll be a mourning process.
Totally. It's a tough one to absorb for me too. I don't think I've really wrapped my mind around it. I don't know if I ever will. I think that there's, I don't know. I don't know if I'd even call it denial. I just think it's like too big. It's just too big to like fully comprehend that it's over, right. You know, the experience was just so like all encompassing and like momentous and important that it's like, how do you even process that being over?
Well, thanks to our colleague Julie Miller for that chat with Justine Loop. For more from that conversation, head to vanityfair.com.
After the break, Richard and I are going to unpack and sort of break down who is going to take the Waystar Royco throne now that Logan is officially dead and gone.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love. Books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You can earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
At eBay, you'll always get that feel of real because your fashion purchase will be backed by Authenticity Guarantee. Whether it's a knit bag, a must-have watch, dreamy jewelry, or fire sneakers and fresh streetwear, every step will feel authentic, every flex will feel real. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay Authenticity Guarantee. Visit ebay.com for terms.
All right, Chris, so we have to end the episode as we do every week, but I think we have more to talk about this week.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, a major the king on the chessboard has been taken off. So there's a queen in cherry form, maybe? She was wearing a nice crown.
I know,
in this
a little
episode.
Fascinator, you know.
Yeah, but wasn't that little.
That was sort of big.
It was more of a Kentucky Derby hat in a way.
Oh, 100%.
It was Kentucky Derby meets Royal Wedding.
The perfect ex, which honestly kind of is Connor and, you know, Willa is sort of our, you know, Princess Diana in a way.
It was kind of fun that she was sort of dressed as like the mother of the bride.
She really was.
Or the mother of the groom, you know. So yeah, I obviously the big question now is, and I actually it kind of feels like two questions. Who is going to take over the company, and which of the kids is going to emerge at the head of the sibling pack? I don't think those two things are necessarily the same thing.
Yeah.
What are you thinking right now?
Well, it's so interesting because like there were so many moves that were being made right before Logan died, re-firing Jerry. And they talked about firing Sid Peach at ATN. Like he was a Jerry and Sid are out.
Right.
And we have to believe that like neither of those things are true because it like the paperwork didn't go through. Like it's like.
Well, there's like no record of it.
There's no record of it. So I think my girl Jerry's back in the thick of it. I think she's, you know, she's has the potential to make some money moves and to like weasel in because the ship is like sinking, right? It's like the thing, it's everything is rocky and she can batten down the hatches and sort of take control of the wheel. And it's, she, you know, her things with Roman are weird and still bad.
But maybe they have a clear path to something real. I don't know.
Yes, if they link up, you know, and if they combine forces, you know, there's a vacuum of power now.
Right.
And someone's got to fill it. And Jerry knows that she was almost on the out, so I think she's probably even hungrier to sort of get back in now that Logan is gone.
Yeah, she got really, you know, by the skin of her teeth, got through this. And, you know, she does say something to Roman when he's like, oh, he's not happy how you deal with the Justice Department stuff. And she's like, I danced us through a thunderstorm without us getting wet. Mm-hmm. She knows she did well. And she knows that the reason Logan wanted her out probably was this interpersonal stuff, which, again, is like suable.
Yes, it's suable.
Maybe, although maybe she was violating some sort of company rule. I don't know. Mm. But yes, I would agree with you that I think Jerry seems best positioned. Because the thing about Carl and Frank and other folks like that is they were always seconds, and they were always kind of seconds, thirds, fourths. Like Jerry at one point was going to become interim CEO at one point, you know, like, and especially because in last season with the cruise ship stuff, like a woman taking charge of the company would be good optics and all that kind of thing. And so I do think Jerry is very well positioned, which I suppose could mean that Roman is, or it could mean the opposite.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you mentioned a woman taking over the company, and we sort of talked about this before, and this might be where the family meets the business, right? Shiv is stepping up to the plate in bigger ways than any of her other siblings thus far, delivering the statement, taking charge. And I could totally see a world in which Shiv sort of emerges as, you know, the woman king, if you will.
Right. So do we think the kids are still going to buy PMG?
Well, do they have the money?
Well, do they have the money, right? Are they Elon Musk, like, bound to it now? Because they've sort of, like, made the overtures and maybe they've signed some paperwork. I don't know. Do they have to go through with it?
Yeah. I feel like they probably, if I'm to guess, I feel like they probably do, but now the Gojo deal is completely, it has to be fucked. There's no way the Gojo deal goes the way that it was going to go before Logan died. And given, you know, what, you know, the falling stock prices, there's no way it sells for what Logan wanted it to sell for.
I wouldn't think so.
And that was where their money, that's where they were going to get the money to
that's
buy Pierce.
Shiv wanted the plane to stay in the air.
Yeah.
She said, for another beat. I love that. It's like, what does that mean? An hour?
What?
Like, 2 hours?
What does that mean?
Yeah, till sundown, like till the markets close. Like, and that's, it was interesting to see Shiv being calculating because you could kind of imagine, you know, we were talking with Bess Levin, our coworker, the other week about the real Murdochs and the schism between James and Lachlan, where Lachlan is really hardline conservative, probably more than his dad even, and James is not lefty, certainly, but like maybe more center, which would be Shiv, you know.
Totally.
Connor, I guess, could be Lachlan, but he's not really
smart enough
in the seat of power. So could Shiv somehow go ahead and buy the more progressive liberal PMG with its MSNBC-esque cable network and go to war with her brothers who run ATN and everything? Maybe they don't sell to Mattson at all. And maybe these two scions or these scions of this media empire become two media empires.
Well, it's interesting because you would think in the wake of their father's death, that would bring the siblings together and that would sort of be something.
I think that short-lived.
Okay, so that's the thing. I think that's something that's worth discussing because I would think the grief would trauma bond, right? Bond them together.
Right.
But I think you bring up a very good point that it could easily send them. Because, there's a will at stake. There's money. There's things to divide beyond even just Waste or Royko that could easily have them at each other's throats. And Kendall already seems to be sort of like making moves, like planning next steps in certain ways. So I could definitely see Shiv, spinning off to Pierce and like going to war with ATN in that way. But again, that depends on, do they have the money?
I feel like they might have been cut out of the will. I think they're still in this sort of like, we get money from the company, but like Logan's personal fortune, whatever that is, like maybe they don't have access to.
Yeah.
I guess it's a question of how happy does the show end? Because here's a scenario where most of the kids are contented. Roman has been talking about, why aren't we buying jet skis and sushi? What are we doing? Mm-hmm. Maybe he's like, he gets a couple episodes past this point and says, you know what? I don't want this. And walks away and just lives life rich, maybe with Jerry, maybe not. Kendall takes over the company and reforms it. So he does improve on his dad's legacy. And then Shiv goes into returns to her origins and goes back to democratic politics.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, maybe Connor's president. I don't know. But there is a way where the kids do of their own accord realize, oh, this thing we've been scrambling for, we don't actually want. Finally, well and truly, we don't want it. Yeah. I don't know if that's what the show is headed toward.
Yeah.
But...
I mean, I'm now going back to some of Logan's last words. He loves them, but they are not serious people. And I find it hard to believe that Kendall, being an unserious person, has the capacity to reform, to improve upon Logan's company and Logan's vision and Logan's plan. So it does feel, if anything, I think your prediction that it's all going to go up in smoke is probably more viable than ever, because in a way, it feels like the only person who could run the Waystar Royko is Logan, right? Maybe it's, or as we said last week, or you said last week, maybe it's a Transformer situation where it's a Jerry and a Roman and a bit of this.
Or people come together.
People come together to create something that's more than the sum of its parts. But I do think that I keep coming back to that you're not serious people line, and now they're in a serious situation.
They are, yeah. And I think the other thing that I have to keep in mind is that, if Gojo were to buy Waystar Royko, the Roy family would still have the cable network, because that's not part of the deal. So I don't think that would be enough for them, though. I think if they want to retain what their dad had, I think they're going to want everything.
Yeah.
So, but I do think there is a possibility, as we head into this fictional election, that, okay, so here's my prediction. I'm just going to make mine.
Go.
For the end of the show. Kendall, who was the last person we see in this episode, takes over because the kids say, oh, you've always wanted it most.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the season, he has become evil. He has fully become his father. He hasn't beaten his father. He has been possessed by his father's spirit, essentially.
Completely.
And he just becomes even worse.
And he becomes somehow even worse.
That's my prediction of how the show ends.
Okay, I'm going to stick to my guns that I saw from last week. I'm going to put all my money in the Sarah Snook Shiv category. And I think I think Kendall's going to flame out. I don't think he has it, what it takes. I don't think he has it. And I think Roman, it would be way too Game of Thrones-y, the little boy becomes the king.
Right.
We've done that before. We've seen that happen on multiple shows now. I don't think it's Roman. I think Shiv is going to emerge as the queen of the family, and sort of maybe I could see her getting seduced by... by the familial ties and the legacy of keeping, Logan's legacy alive. I'm really bad at predictions, so I could literally be wrong.
Oh, well, I'm sure we're both wrong. But Shiv did say, when she gave the statement, as she's walking away, she sort of ad-libs that she's like, no, we intend to see it, see it through. She has now publicly stated her commitment to
the family,
being part of the company.
To being part of the company and being part of the family. And I think it's in some ways it would be more tragic if it's Shiv than if it's Kendall.
And I do and think the show's going to end on a bleak note.
Yeah, but more importantly,
we want to hear what you think. So we say it every week, but this week more than ever, please email us at stillwatchingpod@gmail.com.
Please.
I think we want to spend some time next week, really, if we get enough emails from you listeners, going through your theories and sort of unpacking those in addition to recapping episode 4, because this is probably the biggest pivot point we've ever had in the series, here close to the end.
Yeah.
So we want to hear what you think.
We're close to the end, but we also still have 7 full episodes to go in terms of to figure out, you know, where this is all going to land. And we can only make so many predictions. We only notice so much, you know, so we really do love and appreciate it. We'd love to have your takes in our inbox. So please shoot them our way.
stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. This has been Still Watching from Vanity Fair. Our producer is Emily Elias, and we had production help from Peyton Hayes. We had technical assistance from Jake Loomis. Stephen Valentino is our executive producer, and our theme music is by Alexis Quadrado. We'll be back next week for episode 4. Until then, stay alive.
We'll get a funeral off the rack. We could do Reagan's with tweaks.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.